Hello, Herstorians. I'm your host, Heather Ashley, and welcome to another episode of Women of Herstory, a podcast dedicated to celebrating women who have made or are making their mark on our society. With me, as always, is your favorite co-host, Lavender Magoons. Would you rather be invisible but only for 8 minutes at a time, or be able to fly but only 10 miles per hour with a max height of 3 feet off the ground?
I would rather the latter. I would rather the latter because I probably wouldn't fly fast anyway. I'm afraid of like high speed things, and just being elevated.
You could like get somewhere faster in a car though.
Yeah, but you know, there's like no traffic 3 feet above the ground like that.
There is though.
What?
Cars are like six feet tall.
Why would I fly over a road? I'd fly over water.
Fair.
To get places.
Okay. See, these are the things that I think about.
Those are good questions. Thank you for asking. How are you doing?
I'm good. I think I might go invisibility. 8 minutes at a time. Just like clock, just right when it gets to like 7:59, re-invisible.
Always got to be different.
Re-invisible.
Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, no, that's it. Yeah. You have to be on it, though, if you want to be invisible.
Yeah. You got to have like a timer.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have any morning announcements today. So let's get right to our Herstory lesson about inimitable activist, scholar, educator, and author, Dr. Anna Julia Cooper.
Let's jump right in.
Let's do it. Quote, "The colored women of today occupies, one may say, a unique position in this country. In a period of itself transitional and unsettled, her status seems one of the least ascertainable and definitive of all the forces which made for our civilization. She is confronted by both a woman question and a race problem." Anna Cooper was born on August 10th, 1858 in Raleigh, North Carolina. She was the daughter of a slave woman and her white slaveholder, and some reports even indicated that it might have been the slaveholder's brother. That was the father. Quote, "It is the curse of the minorities in this power-worshipping world that either from fear or from an uncertain policy of expedience, they distrust their own standards and hesitate to give voice to their deeper convictions. Submitting supinely to estimates and characterizations of themselves as handed down by a not unprejudiced dominant majority." Anna was given the opportunity to enroll in St. Augustine's Normal School and Collegiate Institute, now known as St. Augustine's University. It was a school for freed slaves to gain the education that they had previously been denied. When I say that Anna excelled in academia, I mean on a prodigy level of excellence. She even began teaching mathematics part-time when she was the ripe old age of 10.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
She was above and beyond.
Oh.
10?
Yeah, 10.
I think I still had trouble with my times tables.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. I was looking in the back of my notebook, like, what is the...
Yeah, you're, like, trying to find the conversion.
9 times 9, I know this one.
Meanwhile, she's literally, like, teaching like, this math. She's tutoring people.
These are finances, and I'm like, I don't... it doesn't compute.
It was here that she had what you could call a feminist awakening. Early on, she noticed that her male classmates were encouraged to study a more difficult and rigorous curriculum than her female classmates.
What?
I know, right? She's like 10. She's like, things seem out of balance.
This is weird.
You're like, what is happening? In 1877, Anna married fellow classmate George Cooper. He was ordained as an Episcopal minister in 1876, just the year prior. At the time of their nuptials, George was 30 and Anna was 18. The marriage didn't last long as he died just 2 years later.
Goodness.
Yeah, I couldn't find any cause of death written. I even like looked up like where he's buried and his information, it didn't list it. So I wonder if it was like a natural death or something that like nobody talks about.
Or they covered it up and they're like, yeah, he passed.
Yeah,
when did he die? No, he lived a good life. No, when did he die? Yeah, we'll remember him. I think someone's covering something.
I don't know.
Okay. Let us pray.
Anna actually never remarried after he passed. Determined to not let life get the better of her and having incredible ambitions, Anna decided to enroll in the Oberlin College in Ohio on a full ride scholarship.
Nice.
You. I know. I'm telling you.
Full ride.
Like, literal genius. I swear.
Yeah. She was a prodigal. She was a pro.
My.
She
my
was a. She was prodigal. A smart. She was bright.
She graduated in 1884 with a BA in mathematics. In order to pursue this particular degree, she had to petition to be allowed to take the, quote, gentleman's course load rather than the program that was designed for women, which is super annoying.
It's obnoxious.
They were like, oh, we'll give the women, like, a less rigorous one. They'll be okay.
It's ridiculous. Like, it's like if a video game forces you to start on easy mode.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's obnoxious.
Yeah,
I don't understand that. There's other difficulties.
Yeah.
There's other things.
Everyone's different, yeah. And she then continued her pursuit of education and received a master's degree in mathematics in 1887.
Jeez.
I know.
Just, math whiz.
Seriously. Now, that same year, Anna accepted a position as a math, science, and Latin teacher at M Street High School. M Street was established in 1870 as a preparatory high school for Negro youth in Washington, D.C. That is cool.
What opportunities she's been fortunate enough to, and I guess, to have, and also to fight for.
Who she is, she's making the opportunities for herself. Anna supported her students, believing that everyone processes differently for various reasons. She would extend time for tests and completing assignments, and she expressed love and belief in her students no matter their background. And I think that's something really unique of incredibly intelligent people. I, based on previous studies, they find that people with really, really high intelligence levels struggle to connect with other people just because they don't understand why nobody else gets it.
Yeah, I can see that. I can, when you said that out loud, I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. In the 1890s, Anna Cooper began to get involved with the women's club movement. Now, we've talked about various women's clubs on a number of episodes, but here's a little mini refresher. Women's clubs were usually groups of educated, middle-class women who believed it was their duty to help less fortunate African Americans in their community. Cooper helped to unite local and state groups into the National Association of Colored Women's Club. And in doing so, she was able to connect groups of women who she knew would be stronger together. During this time, she became a rather popular public speaker. She addressed a wide variety of people, including the National Conference of Colored Women in 1895, and she joined the executive committee for the first Pan-African Conference in 1900.
Wow. 1900, the first one.
Yeah.
That seems, like, so far away.
Yeah. It's crazy. Quote, let women's claim be as broad in the concrete as the abstract. We take our stand on the solidarity and injustice of special favoritism, whether of sex, race, country, or condition. If one link in the chain is broken, the chain is broken. In 1892, she helped to found the Colored Women's League. And as if she wasn't already running things, that same year she published her one and only book. And it's called, quote, A Voice from the South by a Black Woman from the South.
It's a very important book, I imagine. If that was the one and only, especially with the content that it talked about, must have been so pertinent.
Oh, we're about
and,
to get
and important
into
for everyone
it.
To read. But yeah.
Yeah. It is a collection of essays. And the book is now considered one of the first articulations of Black feminism. The opening statement sets the tone. It says, I speak for the colored women of the South because it is there that the millions of Blacks in this country have watered the soil with blood and tears. And it is there that the colored woman of America has made her characteristic history, and there her destiny is evolving. She goes further and makes a poignant courtroom trial analogy, saying that the most important witness, the Black woman, is rendered mute and voiceless in our society. She identified how systems of oppression and domination converge around issues of race, class, and gender. She argued for Black women to have a central place in the battle for civil rights. And if you listen to our episode on Dorothy Hite, which is season 2, episode 7, you know that sexism was a major issue within the civil rights movement. The book is essentially divided into two sections. The first half of the book is coined the Colored Woman's Office. She concentrates on the education of African American women, arguing that women are essential to, quote, the regeneration and progress of a race. So naturally, they should be brought fully into the education system.
Yeah, I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Right?
Right, that's just, yeah, of course.
Cooper even openly criticizes the Episcopal Church for neglecting the education of African American women. She argues that this is one of the reasons why the church had struggled to recruit large numbers of the African American population. She articulates over and over again that education is the best investment for African American prosperity, even citing the African Methodist Church for making headway in this particular ideology. Anna argues that all students should receive a practical education that will help them earn a living and live prosperously. But those who show special aptitude or desire for more education should, in fact, be allowed to be educated more.
Yeah.
And that includes women.
Absolutely.
She discussed women at large as well as women's suffrage. She said that representation of women in the government would result in, quote, the supremacy of moral forces of reason and justice and love in the government of the nation. Which is so...
I mean, it's so true. And, you know, that goes for every industry, for every sector, you know, when there's appropriate representation, then mm-hmm. everyone, there's just going to be there's like a more balanced... Mm-hmm. you know, system where one side doesn't feel jaded over another group, mm-hmm. you know, because of the mistreatment or the misrepresentation.
Right. Quote, it is not the intelligent woman versus the ignorant woman, nor the white woman versus the black, the brown, and the red. It is not even the cause of woman versus man. Nay, 'tis woman's strongest vindication from speaking that the world needs to hear her voice. It would be subversive of every human interest that the cry of one half the human family is stifled. The world has had to limp along with the wobbling gait of one-sided hesitancy of a man with one eye. Suddenly, the bandage is removed from the other eye and the whole body is filled with light. It sees a circle where before it saw a segment. The darkened eye restored, every member rejoices with it. I just got chills and, like, emotions reading that. Like,
It's just so important. I mean, it's kind of unfortunate that we're still doing the same song and dance now.
100 years later.
You know, like, for it to even have to be said once is obnoxious.
But you know what? The way that I don't know that I've ever read visual, like visually impactful simile or I don't know what I'm trying to say.
She did a great job of
just like
describing that imagery.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's very, it's kind of, it makes sense though, because, you know, we're just kind of, as Madden speaking personally, we're kind of blind to a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
and it just shouldn't be one person in general, regardless of gender or identity, that steers the car in this situation, because this road has so many forks and turns that, like, for one person to be driving or one specific group of people to be driving, the directions are probably going to be wrong.
Yeah.
Probably going to run out of gas.
Absolutely.
Flat tire. Like, you need everyone. You need all hands on deck.
In a ditch somewhere.
Yeah. Late. wrong attire, forgot the gift, left the child at home, didn't check the car out.
Is this the plot of Home Alone? What's happening?
I mean,
In one essay titled Woman Versus the Indian, as a response to another essay of the same title by Anna Shaw, a leader in the women's movement, who in her essay placed the issue of white women's rights against the rights of indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
Cooper then issued a call for the inherent rights of all people, even more specifically targeting those who usually are denied those rights. Cooper has a quote that is printed in every single U.S. passport that comes from this essay, and it reads as follows, quote, "The cause of freedom is not the cause of a race or a sect, a party or a class. It is the cause of humankind, the very birthright of humanity."
Yep, that part.
Now that's where the quote ends in the passports. It actually goes on to say, quote, "Now, unless we are greatly mistaken, the reform of our day, known as the women's movement, is essentially such an embodiment, if its pioneers could only realize it."
Oh, they should have put the rest of that in my passport. I think that there was a mistake made on every passport.
Yeah.
They could just make it like 2 fonts smaller.
And just then be like, this fit, is the rest of that.
That would fit on the passport. I'll make space.
Mm-hmm. Another essay, titled The Higher Education of Women, challenges the antiquated 19th century sentiments against the education of women. Quote, "The old, subjective, stagnant, indolent, and wretched life for a woman has gone. She has as many resources as men, as many activities beckon her on, as large possibilities swell and inspire her heart." Now, no matter how many episodes we do, I will literally never not be gobsmacked at the idea of people not wanting women to be educated. I will never not be,
it's weird.
Flames on the side of my face.
19th century.
It's even today.
19th century legislature is so weird because I don't like it. I mean, obviously.
Not even legislature, just ideals.
Right. No, all of that. Anything in the 19th century is just not really my thing, just because I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be alive.
Those ideals have carried over into a lot of societies today. There are a lot of places around the world that don't allow their women to be educated after, like, fourth grade.
Yeah, no, right, but if, right, no, so, and that's awful. No, yeah. Of course, but, you know, I just think color-wise, probably wouldn't fare
dead
any better. Yeah, like, so, yeah. I'm on board with you, sister. we could get rid of those outdated laws.
In the essay, she highlights the positive impacts of higher education for women. In this essay, she echoed the sentiment I quoted earlier, where black women and girls were dealing with the, quote, race problem in a woman question. Quote, "Give the girls a chance. Let our girls feel that we expect more from them, that they merely look pretty and appear well in society. Teach them that there is a race with special needs which they and only they can help, that the world needs and is already asking for their trained, efficient forces." The second half of the book focuses on race and culture. She takes a good look at various authors and their representation of African Americans, including Harriet Beecher Stowe and Albion Tourget. Now, she came to the conclusion that not a single accurate depiction of African Americans has been written. Quote, "What I hope to see before I die is a black man honestly and appreciatively portraying both the Negro as he is and the white man occasionally as seen from the Negro standpoint." In 1902, Anna Cooper was named the principal of M Street High School, and she led a controversial curriculum.
Oh.
She greatly enhanced the academic reputation of the school. And actually, under her tenure, several M Street graduates were admitted into Ivy League schools, which is incredible.
That's great under her tutelage.
Mm-hmm. Anna knew that poverty and trauma play a large part in a student's academic success. If you're not sure if you're going to eat dinner that night, you're not going to be worried about an English paper. You're going to be trying to figure out where dinner's going to come from.
Yep.
And Anna also knew that with time and resources, students can overcome challenges like these. She emphasized college prep courses, and she had a lot of critics, including Booker T. Washington, who favored vocational education and training for black people.
Interesting.
Yeah. The all-white District of Columbia Board of Education trumped up some random charges and refused to renew Anna's contract for the 1905 to 1906 school year.
That's annoying.
They didn't like that she wasn't teaching the less rigorous and the lower standard of education that was widely accepted for the black schools.
Dumb it down, please, Anna.
Basically, yeah, Anna saw that black students were disproportionately told that they could only work with their hands, while white students were encouraged to work with their minds. Anna said, "I don't care, and I'm going to keep teaching." A direct quote, obviously. She taught the next 4 years at the historically black college in Jefferson City, Missouri, Lincoln University.
Great. I'm glad. Right on her feet.
Yeah, like, she said, okay, that's fine. I'll go somewhere else that wants me.
Take my brain elsewhere.
Weirdly, in 1910, she was rehired as a teacher at M Street that was renamed Dunbar High School after 1916, and she stayed there for the next 20 years until 1930.
Oh, okay. So she was fine with them after.
Yeah, I think they just, I think they probably
got rid of some of the WAC board members that were racist and crazy and racist.
A year after she began teaching again at M Street, Anna began to study part-time for a doctoral degree.
Yeah.
Now, she had to put a pause on this endeavor after her brother died in 1915. Oh. So she raised his 5 grandchildren on a teacher's salary. So
wow.
She was like, got it, bring it on. She adopted them, I believe. That was what my...
Wow.
Yeah.
More power to her
and
after
then
that.
In one source, I found that she also fostered 2 children. So she had 5 adopted children and was fostering 2. Teacher's salary, just like doing everything she can because
That's impressive.
She's a shero.
That's impressive for
sure.
I mean, she to have to give up the doctorate path like that. But I mean, you know, 7, basically taking care of those 7 kids. Mm-hmm. She was paving the way for future generations.
Well, luckily, she was able to return to school in 1924, and then in 1925, at the age of 67, she received a doctorate in history from Sorbonne in Paris. She wrote her dissertation in French on slavery.
Wow.
It was published in English as Slavery and the French Revolutionists, 1788 to 1805. Dr. Anna Julia Cooper was the 4th African American woman to earn a PhD in any field in the United States.
Man, that she
at
really
67 too. She's just like, I'ma keep going.
Yeah, I mean, she deserves
it. Try and stop me.
She deserves it after all the work she put in and all the sacrifices.
Oh yeah. Amazing. When Anna left M Street in 1930, she was appointed the president of Frelinghuysen University in Washington, D.C. at the age of 72. Frelinghuysen was a group of community colleges, basically, for Washington, D.C.'s working black residents. She served as president until 1941 and continued to serve as registrar well into her 90s, only leaving when the school closed in 1950.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, I know, right?
What a legacy.
Oh my gosh.
To work there until she was 90, I'm sure they had like, I'm sure they took care of her. And, like,
oh, for sure.
But they had like a picture of her up there.
Oh, 100%. Dr. Anna Julia Cooper died on February 27th, 1964, in her sleep at the age of 105.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
105.
105.
I would have, I mean, I don't know. I that's so
calling
much.
Calling it quits at 100?
Why? Like, what are you doing at 102? What do you have to prove at 104?
I mean, to
damn
be
it.
Fair, she was still, like, getting up and going to work in her 90s.
Can you imagine her great-great-granddaughter being like, I'm not trying to do anything today, and she's like, listen.
Yeah, she's
60
like,
60 years ago, I was in charge of 4 organizations.
She's like, you're 35,
I had 3 grandchildren, it's just like, oh, man, I can't do anything around my great-great-grandmother. She 4th black doctor of all time. Damn it. Can't get away with nothing.
She's incredible.
Fine,
crazy.
Grandma.
Yeah, right? Ugh, you could
get
never...
Get my 3rd PhD. Can't tell her nothing. Damn.
Oh my gosh.
Tell grandma shit.
I'm going to leave you guys with this quote. Peace produced by suppression is neither natural nor desirable. And I felt like that was a good rounding way to end that.
Wow. I don't know why I was expecting more. And somehow that was very...
It was so succinct.
It was just very... It was... Oof. Yeah. No. Wow. I mean, she lived a life. She lived like two lifetimes.
At least three.
I don't know. Like, that's... she's done... She did so much. Like, she really set the bar and kind of, you know... Hopefully, I would like to think, help change the game for black people in the country. In terms of education.
I would venture...
I would hope.
Safely to guess, I think that, like, everybody who had her as a teacher, principal, president of whatever, were impacted and inspired in some small way, at least, you know, just to have some, but just the fact that, you know, it was known, especially back then, that she was someone who was like, everybody learns differently, and there's a lot of outside factors. Well, that's now, like, still becoming mainstream thought, in that not everybody learns the same way. Like, she was on that in the 1900s.
Yeah,
like, in literally
1900s. Yeah.
Like, she was like, everybody's different, and trauma and poverty affect your life. Especially, she's, you know, was born a slave child. Like,
it's weird to say that she was ahead of her time, but, like, she was definitely way more, like, progressive thinking in relation to the time period that she grew up in.
Yes.
Like, she, like, you know, some people are like,
she's talking about
black
feminism before feminism, yeah.
But, like, some people like her need to be, are appropriately born in their time, because without them, there wouldn't be the change that came afterward.
Mm-hmm.
Like, without her, there wouldn't have been institutions, you know, HBCUs maybe might not have popped up as much if there weren't prominent black figures to help promote these, you know, historical schools that need to be put on the map, you know, because there were these all-white schools that were, like, not giving, you know, minorities a chance. So, yes, definitely,
absolutely.
I think she helped. She definitely helped minorities, future generations, the education system in the United States. Like, she definitely played a big role to kind of bring it back to my initial thought at the beginning of the end of this episode. I'm seeing the bigger picture now, and her work was definitely instrumental in furthering the progress of black people and the education system in the United States.
And specifically
black women.
Women.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Herstorians, for tuning in again. Subscribe, follow, tell the doctor when you get your vaccine.
Please.
Come back this Friday for an interview with singer-songwriter, producer, director, and vocal coach, Elaine Romanelli.
Oh.
In this interview, she talks about the mission behind her upcoming Songworks Showcase, happening on Monday, May 3rd. Everybody go reserve your tickets. Why she felt compelled to make this particular showcase happen, and so much more. Follow us on the socials, TikTok.
At Her Story Podcast.
Facebook.
Women of Her Story.
Instagram.
Women of Her Story Podcast.
Twitter.
The Her Story Pod.
And visit our website at
ofherstory.com.
Until Friday, be safe, stay healthy, and show the world what you're made of.
Happy end of May. Happy end of April. Happy end of April. Happy beginning of May. Wear a mask. Goodbye.